All right, so my name's Liam. I go to RMIT. I'm a member of Socialist Alternative. I'll be sort of chairing and facilitating the discussion today. Our speaker is Jasmine Duff. Jasmine's a long-standing socialist activist in Melbourne, part of the Monash Socialist Alternative Club, also part of the National Committee of Socialist Alternative. So she's, very experienced, very knowledgeable about socialist politics. That's why I think she's a very authoritative person to speak on the question of what do socialists say about authority. So, please make Jasmine feel very welcome.
Well, I think the reason that it's important to have these kind of discussions and to talk about the question of authority, what Marxists think about it, is because there's a whole lot of people, often quite genuine leftists, who get drawn to various different theories, partly often various strands of anarchism, but also other things that place authority and opposing authority as kind of the centre of their worldview, and seeing authority, the existence of hierarchies, as being the key problem in society today. And I think that is a worldview that unfortunately can't lead to a real radical transformation of society. But then on the other hand, it's one that is worth engaging with. And then on the other hand, you also have people who, as in particular after the sort of dictatorial rule of Stalin over Russia for a whole period, and the distortion of socialism that came alongside that. Now more and more on the internet, people are getting attracted to these ideas that Marxism should be interpreted as being about the sort of authoritarian rule of a small minority. And I think that is also a vision that we have to really strongly reject. And so I'll explain it in more detail, but for us in Socialist Alternative, and what I would argue is the real Marxist tradition, we are not for imposing kind of our authority or the authority of some small minority upon the working class. Instead, we think that the authority of the working class should be imposed on the whole of society, should be imposed upon the capitalist class that keeps people down. And we're for accepting the leadership of the workers' movement and trying to participate in the leadership of the workers' movement, to make our arguments in it and to hope to help to lead the workers' movement to success and to having a classless society. I think the starting point for discussing authority is to first define what we're actually talking about. And the way that Marx's key collaborator, Friedrich Engels, explained it was, he said, authority is the imposition of the will of another upon ours. So a pretty simple explanation. It's one person or various people imposing their will upon another's. And an example of some of the people I spoke about before who sort of see opposing this authority as kind of the key task. An example of one of those people is Bakunin, who was an anarchist from the 19th century. And he wrote that he stood for the absolute rejection of every authority. He said, instead, henceforth, society must be ordered order in society must result from the greatest possible realisation of individual liberty. So placing kind of individuals and their ability to have complete freedom to do whatever they want as against the sort of one person or various people being able to impose their will on individuals. The anarchists frequently ask questions, which is a kind of document that you can find online that's quite regularly read by people who are interested in these politics. It states that anarchism, to sort of deal with the different problems in capitalist society, offers a coherent way of making sense of these crises, traces them to a common source, and this source is the principle of hierarchical authority, so the existence of authority hierarchy in society. And so you can see how people would come to these conclusions. The society that we live in is ruled by a violent, wealthy minority. The capitalist class, they impose the wills of profits upon the vast majority of us against our will. And they oppress, exploit the vast majority of people. Marxists are for ending the rule of that small minority and for ridding the world of class divisions. We're for the establishment of a fundamentally classless society where everyone participates in decision-making, in debating, in figuring out what we should do with the resources of society and the political decisions. But to get there, I think we can't just declare authority abolished. And we also can't just see ourselves as kind of isolated individuals. Instead, what socialists are for is the working class imposing its collective authority upon the elite at the top through taking mass action. So things like strikes, occupations, demonstrations. So first I'm going to talk through a bit what the authority of the capitalist class looks like, how it's enforced upon us, and then also what to do about that. So yeah, as I've kind of talked about, the society we live in at the moment is extremely authoritarian, undemocratic. For the vast majority of us, we're stripped of any real meaningful control over society. So things like the decision over whether refugees should be allowed to come into this country, what happens to the earth that we stand on. There's been poll after poll that shows that the Adani coal mine, for example, is opposed by 65 to 70% of the Australian population. And yet, despite that, we have no say over whether that mine goes ahead, and instead the decision is in the hands of a handful of government officials and capitalists. No matter who wins the election in May, the thing we're told is like the exercise of democracy in our society. No matter who wins that election, the Adani coal mine is sure to go ahead. Both the Labor Party and the Liberal Party support that coal mine. And so then, as well as that, our basic rights are subject to that same kind of undemocratic control. A tiny minority of very well-off individuals can decide that Australian workers don't deserve penalty rates on the weekend, or that they should suffer large cuts to those. But it's not just kind of like political and big picture decisions like this that we don't have control of. As you've probably heard in quite a few sessions so far, this weekend, like workers, we produce everything in society. Without us, nothing would move. The trains, the trucks that transport all goods anywhere, they wouldn't move, but also those resources and goods wouldn't exist in the first place. And we spend hours at work each day slogging away producing these things. But we don't control our work. If you work in a steel factory, for example, you don't have a choice over whether the steel you make goes to help build hospitals or fighter jets. You don't control the thing that you spend all day creating. As well as that, you don't control what you do at work. So a boss, this kind of one individual, or maybe a board, gets to control what you do with your hands, your feet, your face. Do you smile? I went to a session by call centre workers who were talking about how their boss had instructed them to put on their gay voice when they were on the phone. So all of these really kind of tiny, minor, very personal aspects of our lives are subject to undemocratic control. We have no say over it. But also, if we don't do these things, if we don't accept them, we don't have a way of affording food. So where does the authority of the capitalist class come from? It comes from their ownership over the means of production. So over all of the mines, the factories, oil reserves, all of these things. It gives them control over everything that's produced in society, and it gives them control over workers. The only thing that we have to survive in this society is our ability to go and work for a boss. We can't work without the things that they own. So you can't build a skyscraper without enormous machinery, cranes, things like that. You can't produce steel without a factory that a boss owns. And so you have to go and sell them your labour to be able to live. So this gives them all this control over our lives. They hire us, they fire us, they determine our wages. Can we feed our family? What house we can live in? But they don't just control the lives of their workers, as we discussed before. They control big political decisions over the economy. And that comes not just because the government kind of decides to obey these capitalists. It comes because these people who own all of these things, they can crash economies in a second. Governments understand that to maintain a stable economy, to stay in power, they have to prioritise the interests of the capitalist class. And so capitalist authority means a small minority wielding authority over the great majority of us in the interests of profit. It's an authority, it's not authority itself, this kind of concept, or like one person imposing themselves on another. It's not authority that exploits us, that oppresses us, or that makes society undemocratic, I would argue. Instead, it's the fact that authority is wielded by a minority, the capitalist minority. And the reason that they use their authority to exploit and oppress us is not because authority is inherently exploitative or inherently corrupting. They exploit working class people because their entire existence depends on it. As a class, they can only exist because they make profit over the labour that we do, that working class people do. And so society is divided into, yeah, the vast majority of us who do all of the work, and this minority class who, yeah, exercise sort of dictatorial authority of us, who leech off us. But although we need the factories, the cranes, the warehouses that they control, the trucks that they own, well, they also need us, because those trucks would be pretty useless if they were just standing still. So would the factories and the cranes. And if we don't do all of the work, then they won't have anything. And so then, yeah, how do they enforce their authority? Have these various kind of measures. Partly, if you don't work for a capitalist, you don't eat. Maybe you get access to Centrelink or welfare, depending on what country you're in, and you just sort of scrape by. But if you want any kind of living beyond bare subsistence, you've, you know, access to stable housing, to, you know, a bit of a choice over what kind of food you eat, waterproof clothing, you've got to go and work for a capitalist. And when it comes to taking resources from other countries or controlling their populations in times of turmoil, they don't just rely on this kind of economic power over our lives, but over force as well. So they have control over armies, police forces, these kind of things. And you go to a protest and you'll see the police will be there in huge numbers, just kind of showing, well, we've got control, and if we want to use it, we can. So how do we get rid of their authority over us? Well, some people argue that we should abandon living and working as we do now, and sort of remove ourselves from their authority. We should retreat out of society. We should set up our own isolated version of it. And go, like, a camp in the wilderness, where you sort of grow your own food and, like, knit your clothes, make a shelter, this kind of stuff. And they argue that, like, if we do this, capitalists won't have authority over us anymore, because we'll have, yeah, like, taken ourselves out of their authority. And I think that sounds like, you know, like a pleasant idea of a holiday for some people who like camping. but it's not actually something that combats and attacks their power over society more generally. So you might be, yeah, out in the forest somewhere having a camping trip, but at the same time refugees will be languishing on Manus Island and Nauru in detention centres. At the same time, you know, construction workers will be dying on site. And so for us, it's not about just kind of removing ourselves from capitalist authority, going away somewhere. It's about having to confront their authority over the entirety of society. And if, like, this kind of small thing of, like, going and removing yourself from society, that was taken up on a mass scale, which actually sort of bothered the capitalists, affected them in some way because their workers have gone away. Well, they would use force to prevent that. They would use their control over armies, over police forces, to, yeah, go and crush it. And so instead we have to look at getting rid of their power over society as a whole, not just over sort of small pockets of it, or over our individual lives. But then, yeah, how do we do this? And I think the first thing is that we can't just sort of declare their authority abolished. There's been attempts to do that in the past. An example is Mikhail Bakunin, who was an anarchist in the 19th century. And he attempted to sort of, yeah, abolish the state of the authority of the state in Lyon in France by declaring it abolished. So he went into the town hall with some of his kind of co-conspirators. They go there and they sort of like go there in the hope of triggering an uprising. They go there, they take over the town hall and they declare the abolition of the state. So in 1870 they put up all these wall posters and they have articles on them declaring what they've done. So Article 1, the administration and government machinery of the state, having become impotent, is now abolished. Article 2, all criminal and civil courts are hereby suspended and replaced by people's justice. Article 3, payment of taxes and mortgages is suspended and will no longer be collected. And it goes on. And the sort of, yeah, idea of this is like, well, we'll go and declare the state abolished in this place, and then that will trigger the working class to see what we've done, to try and implement that where they are and rise up. But the problem with this is that working class consciousness and the sort of confidence of working class people to take over, you know, their workplaces, different parts of society, that's something that has to be sort of built over time, learned through struggle. It's not something that can just kind of be triggered when you sort of explain, hey, here's how you can do it. Instead, it's something that, yeah, builds over time. And the Lyon uprising was, yeah, very quickly crushed. The police didn't bother jailing Bakunin and his fellows afterwards, they just kind of move them on. And so we can't just declare that the capitalist authority over society is abolished and then hope that other people will respond to that around us and that they'll sort of take that up. Because the reality of the authority they have, the things I went through before, economic control over people's lives, the army forces, the police, all of these things are a constant presence in people's minds. And so people need to learn how to overcome these things. It can't just happen in an instant. And so instead, socialists are for is the masses of society collectively imposing their society, their authority upon those above us, and learning that, being able to gain confidence to do that through a whole different process. The first form that it takes often is strikes. People here would have probably seen strikes, maybe been on them. Bosses profit from driving down workers' wages. And so if workers want higher and better wages or health and safety conditions, you can't just kind of respect the boss's individual autonomy, their right to individual liberty instead, and try and sort of politely convince them of it. Instead, workers need to go on strike, so refuse to work until their demands are met. This means that you have to go against the boss's individual right to do what they want. So, for example, to make a profit. Instead, you need to impose your own authority on the workplace. Workers can shut it down. They can ensure the boss can't make any profits. And so to fight for better wages, workers need to impose their collective authority as a group over their bosses. But then as well as that, for a strike to take place, authority doesn't just operate on the level of workers over boss. It also operates within the workers' movement. And an example of that, a bunch of us in Melbourne recently went out and supported the Chemist Warehouse strike, which people might have heard of. It was in other places as well, Queensland. When those workers went out on strike, there was a very, very high proportion in especially one of the warehouses where workers voted over sort of 80, 90% to go ahead with the strike. The vast majority of out of this workplace of 400 workers voted to go out on strike. But there were some workers who were not confident enough to do it. They weren't sure about it or they didn't want to. And so when all of these Chemist Warehouse workers went on strike, they were striking in particular against things like sexual assault, but also the extremely, extremely low wages. They went outside the workplace and they linked arms so that none of the workers who opposed the strike could get into the workplace. They knew that if, 20, 30 workers who were trying to get in, trying to operate the warehouse, well, if they went in there and did that, it would undermine the strike. It would make it harder to impose your authority on the boss because they're still able to move some stuff around, make some profit. And so instead, they stood outside, and when I was there, when a scab walked up and he sort of drove up his car, he got out very confident and he sort of looked at the picket line and they said, look, mate, come on, like, you know that this isn't going to work out. Just go and stand over there. And he went and stood in a corner on the nature strip with two other scabs, and they kind of stood there looking like quite sad. Now, if you were to consistently apply the principle that authority in itself is something to be opposed, that no one should ever impose their will upon another's will, then you would have to oppose them doing that. Because, well, wherefore, if that scab wants to go to work, then they should be able to go to work because that's what they want to do. That's their liberty. They should be able to control that decision. But instead, Marxist, but also just any like genuine left-wing person would be for that person being blocked, for the workers picketing outside there, stopping the scabs from getting in. So even within the workers' movement, authority is necessary. The majority of workers who voted to go on strike needed to impose their authority on the minority of workers who wanted to undermine that strike. And there's another way as well that authority operates within the workers' movement. So workers' ability to win struggles, including that strike, it depends on there being networks of militants who can argue for, who can influence the people around them. And people who can sort of help to take a lead. And that's not something that's established by force, by someone coming in and saying, now I am leading this strike, I'm leading this thing. Instead, it comes through shared experience, the development of mutual respect based on someone sort of being trustworthy, being put to the test a series of times and being able to stand up to that, sort of proving themselves as a legitimate representative. And that's not the kind of relationship that is often associated with this concept of authority, but it's a key form of authority in the workers' movement. One of the ways that Peter Fryer, who was a witness to the Hungarian Revolution, he explained how sort of this authority developed in the Hungarian Revolution, said he saw the emergence to leading positions of ordinary men, women and youths whom the rule of the security forces had kept submerged. The revolution thrust them forwards. It aroused their civic pride and their latent genius for organisation. It set them to work building democracy out of the ruins of bureaucracy. And he said, you can see people developing from day to day. So that's one example of it. Another is a comrade of mine, Corey, went to the Yellow Vest demonstrations, in a couple of them in Paris, in France. And he said, someone I kept seeing throughout these demonstrations was Eric Drouet. He was one of the first organisers of the Yellow Vests was part of organising the main rally I was at in Paris. Every time I saw him, he was in constant, intense discussion and debate with other sort of leading figures who had emerged. Or he was commanding a significant audience of people on various directions of the rally. What should we do next? Outside of this, he's a truck driver. On every other day of the week, he's just another worker. But now, every Saturday, he's one of the leaders of a new movement. So when ordinary people, when working class people start to impose their will on society, start to really come into their own, these kind of leading figures and militants can just kind of be thrust up from the masses. People who need to, okay, well, we need to make a decision. So who's going to figure that out? People start debating it. And then these kind of figures of leadership can emerge who are kind of tried and tested throughout it. We're for imposing the authority of the working class upon the capitalist class. And also, we're for the majority of working class people being able to impose their decisions upon minorities who, and the sort of, like, yeah, group of scabs, for example, who want to oppose those. But then there's the question, well, how do we get rid of the capitalist authority over us altogether? Not just win a wage increase, but, yeah, get rid of it for good. Well, Marxists look to, as I said before, working class revolution. And this isn't just a concept that socialists invented. It's something that you can observe and that's happened all throughout history. All through the history of capitalism, there's been these moments where the working class surges up, tries to throw off the shackles that capitalism places on it. And people might have been to the session earlier on the fact that there's a revolution going on right now in Sudan and in Algeria, but as well as that, it's happened yet Egypt, Poland, Hungary, as I said before. And it was observing one of these revolutions that helps Marx to understand how society can be transformed. And when he saw a revolutionary commune installed in Paris, Marx commented, what elasticity, what historical initiative, what a capacity for sacrifice in these Parisians. History has no example of a like greatness. So Marxists have always sort of looked to the masses for social transformation rather than the rule of majority, and also had great faith in the fact that the vast majority of people are capable of this, are capable of being able to come forward and develop. It's worth taking some time here, I think, to discuss the state, which is also something that often comes up in these sort of conversations. By revolution, Marxists don't mean a few socialists taking over the existing state, for example, through a coup. We don't mean things like the regimes of figures like Castro, Chavez in Cuba, Venezuela, these kind of places where you have sort of a small group of socialists who kind of sweep into the state, take it through a coup with like various kind of, you know, militias, popular militias supporting them. Instead, these societies cut against what Marx argued for, which is that the working class itself would take power, not some people who claim to represent the working class. He specifically rejected societies that are run by a small minority, yeah, that claim to act for the working class. One of the other things about the state is that, a lot of anarchists, both now and also in the past, though not all of them, have argued that the key to getting rid of capitalist society is to target the state. So the government, the army, the police, the bureaucrats that are attached to it. Marx and Engels argued that getting rid of the state itself would not transform society. The capitalists who own and run production, who have this enormous social control over society through their economic control, their control over everything we need to survive, they would come up with some other organ to suppress the working class. They control the arms anyway. They'd have another way. And instead, they argued that the entire way that capitalist society is run at a social level has to be overturned. Workers have to take over production, develop their own institutions for running society. And these institutions can then be used to smash the capitalist state and to replace it with workers' control. And in the German ideology, They ridicule what they call sort of the old idea that the state collapses in on itself as soon as all its members leave it, taken out. They say this proposition reveals all the fantasy and impotence of pious desire. And rather, the communist revolution, which removes the division of labour, ultimately abolishes political institutions. So the state can't just sort of have either its rulers replaced with other people and continue to exist. It also can't be sort of the only thing and the like thing that you sort of smash and then have nothing to replace it with, no reorganisation of the society around it. So that's what we're not for. What are Marxists for? Well, yeah, we're for revolution below, but that means the working class taking over, yeah, their workplaces, running them in their own right, kicking out bosses and owners, directly seizing the means of production. But workers taking control of their workplaces alone, that's not enough to get rid of the capitalist control over society. Workers need to take over the entire way that, that society is organised, not just their kind of individual workplaces. And to do this, they need an organ of control. And that organ, throughout history, has been workers' councils. These are councils that are made up of delegates elected by workers in their workplaces, sort of workplaces often nearby each other. They elect these people. They can meet up, make decisions about all different things, the organisation of society, the distribution of goods, protests and things like that to have. And these are not something that was invented by socialists. They were something that was invented by the working class. And Isaac Deutscher, who's a historian, explains the first Russian Workers' Council, or Soviet, which emerged during a strike in 1905. He says the nucleus of the Soviet was set up by the strikers from 50 different printing shops. They elected delegates and instructed them to form a council. These were soon joined by delegates of other trades. The Soviet instantaneously gained an extraordinary authority. It was the first elective body which represented the hitherto disenfranchised working classes. Another example of these councils being formed is during the Hungarian Revolution in 1956, where you had workers' councils emerge, not in this kind of uniform way, but all around the country, they emerge in different ways. There was things called revolutionary committees, national committees, revolutionary councils, workers' councils. They all called them all different things all around the country, some of them comprised of revolutionary students and workers. Some of them were just like the workers in their own factory. Some of them were workers linking up from all different factories. It was extremely kind of messy. But the point of saying this is that they developed as, you know, the working class are sort of pushed forwards. Well, we want our own leadership, a working class leadership, and we want control over that leadership. And so they pushed forwards delegates to be part of figuring out decisions, the distribution of arms, demonstrations, and also that the thing that they produced is kind of eventually sort of a national council composed of the various different councils and committees and things. And it ended up negotiating with the Russian government as kind of the representatives of this, political representatives of the country. And ultimately, these workers' councils are an alternate way of organising society. Rather than basing society upon the private ownership of resources and the means of production by capitalists, workers have the capacity take over the running of society, placing economic and political decisions under the control of workers' councils. And this is something that, again, sort of like I was talking about with blocking scabs, this is something that is counter to individual liberty, everyone being able to make decisions just for themselves over what they do. We're not for individuals just kind of making a decision. We're for individuals being part of making a collective decision and then carrying that decision out as part of the workers' council. So what these things, you have mass big debates, decisions, and then these decisions being carried out on a mass scale. That's how society can be reorganised. It would be undemocratic then if you had a whole bunch of people who were sort of, you know, like you have a big debate and then a decision on something, and then there's this minority of workers who sort of think, oh, well, I don't like that, so I'm going to go and do something else. Well, that sabotages the ability of people collectively to actually make decisions about society, to democratically decide things. Instead, it's sabotaged by a minority of people, a small amount of people who just don't want to carry it out. Well, we're not for that. In order to take all property from the ruling class, though, as well, workers will need to be able to use a force of their own. Capitalists have never and will never give over control of society without a fight. And in order to win this fight, workers will need what we would refer to as their own state. What does that mean? It means building a separate workers' state controlled democratically by workers' councils, which can be used to smash the capitalist state and rebuild society anew. So the entire reordering of society, removing vestiges of capitalist power, it can't happen instantaneously. And the way that Marx described this state, it means the proletariat, instead of struggling sectionally against the economically privileged classes, so instead of always just struggling upwards, instead it means they've attained sufficient strength and organisation to employ a general means of coercion in the struggle. So they've got their own armed forces to oppose and combat that of the capitalist class. And so, the working class has to enforce a new order on the capitalist class. And that as well means an insurrection. So going in, having these workers' councils, but also going in, disbanding the existing capitalist government and replacing its rule with the democratic rule of workers through their councils and the other institutions they control, like armies. And this rule is what Marxists refer to as the dictatorship of the proletariat. The use of the term dictatorship in this context doesn't mean the rule of some individual dictator or a group of dictators. Instead, it means a class, the working class, dictating over the capitalist class, dictatorship by the working class, using their force to reorder society, to impose their will on the capitalist class, and to democratically build society anew, deciding what to do through workers' councils. And German Marxist Rosa Luxemburg described this dictatorship. She said this dictatorship consists in the manner of applying democracy, not in its elimination. It applies in energetic, resolute attacks upon the well-entrenched rights and economic relationships of bourgeois society, without which a social transformation can't be accomplished. But this dictatorship must be the work of the class and not of a leading minority in the name of the class. That is, it must proceed step by step out of the active participation of the masses. And so this worker state exists only to reorder society, to get rid of the capitalist as a class, to replace all class divisions in society with a classless collective society. Marx and Engels argue again and again that this worker state is temporary, that it exists only until all class divisions have been buried. And Marx argued that if class rule has disappeared, there is no state in the present political sense, because a state is just a sort of tool for one class to oppress another class. In Engels' words, so long as the proletariat still uses the state, it does not use it in the interests of freedom, but in order to hold down its adversaries, the ruling class. And as soon as it becomes possible to speak of freedom, the state as such ceases to exist. We would therefore propose to replace state everywhere by, I don't speak German, so to replace them by Scheinwesen. A good old word which can very well convey the meaning of the French word commune. In other words, workers' democratically controlled councils would become the basis for reorganising society. And Bakunin derisively argues, in response to this suggestion by Marx, he says, the Germans number around 40 million. Will, for example, all 40 million be members of the government? And Marx replies to this, certainly, since the whole thing begins with the self-government of the commune. One of the first tasks of this new society would be to help the working classes in other countries successfully win revolutions of their own. What of the rest of the state? So in particular, the armed force, the sort of armed force of the workers' state that is being used by them to keep the capitalist class down. What happens to that? Where does it go? Well, this armed force exists for one class, the working class, to keep down the other, the ruling class. In the instance of a state run by workers' councils, it exists to expropriate capitalists to protect the workers' democratic institutions from the ruling class, both in their country but also internationally. But once the working class has taken power internationally and workers take part in decision-making through the dictatorship of the proletariat, over time the use of the armed might of this state becomes less and less used. Once the capitalist class has disappeared entirely and all property is collectively used for the benefit of all ordinary people, there's no longer a need for a state. There's no one now to keep down. There's not another class to keep oppressed. And so this state would disappear. Decision-making still takes place, so the workers' councils still exist. And all of humanity is yet participating in figuring out how to organise society. But society is classless. Class divisions have ceased to exist, and instead humans relate to each other as equals. and authority as we know it today, class domination, is abolished.